from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez on the Michigan Talk Network, all over the world on our podcast. WildMichiganRadio.com is where you can pick that up absolutely free 24-7 via our website, WildMichiganRadio.com. As mentioned, the podcast is there. It's on iTunes. It's on like 25 different places that I've counted so far. I know how they all get it. I don't care as long as it's getting out to you. If you miss it on the radio, you can pick it up on the podcast. It's a beautiful thing, and that's all being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127, and wherever you listen to the podcast, you can get something shipped from Not Just Guns to you via their auction or their online sales. Go to notjustguns.com. Same thing goes for our friends at Conquest Sense, makers of VS1 and the Evercalm Sense in a stick. Great stuff, man. And it is, of course, ATA approved for you to purchase and use without fear of transmitting CWD. That's been a big thing on our radar here. As a matter of fact, I was in the MUCC office way back when it was first announced that we had it in the natural field, if you will, in the uncaptive or the non-captive portion. We had it, of course, in some of the captive facilities, the deer farms. There were one or two that started out with, and ends up in the live population, or the free roaming population, if you will, and you know, the speculation on that, and a pretty good idea as to what happened. But you know, I'm not a biologist, but this guy is. Chad Stewart is the deer, elk, and moose management specialist. We're going to call him the deer biologist for the remainder of the show. Chad, a longtime friend, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Duran. How about you?
Doing well. Good to have you here. And the CWD has been under close watch by not only the Michigan DNR, but a lot of us in that hunt and fish this state. And you know, it looks like last year surveillance picked up 25 positive deer, which in that big of a herd seems to be pretty good. It's still scary, but still pretty good.
Yeah, you know, we've shifted our surveillance strategy around quite a bit in the past year. So previously, especially when we first found CWD for the first couple years, what we would do is do a lot of intensive surveillance around where CWD was identified. And what we're trying to do in those early years is try to identify sort of the scope and scale of where CWD exists, you know, now that we know that we have it in that area. But what happens is, if you keep doing surveillance in that area over and over and over again, because CWD is a really slow-moving disease, the results don't change a whole lot from year to year. So what we started seeing was that we were getting very similar results by doing the same thing year after year, whereas we were not looking in other parts of the state, which is important to look at. You know, the best way to do anything with CWD that we know of is some sort of early detection and some sort of mitigation of, you know, to try to prevent it from becoming established in your deer herd. So we felt it was better to shift our approach to look around other places where historically we've not been. And we've done a lot of sampling in some of those areas, starting in southern Michigan. And fortunately, like you said, 25 positives, not many that came out of those areas, really only added one county where we found CWD, and that was Isabella County, which was right next to our core area. So it's not even that surprising. So all in all, really promising efforts that we weren't finding it more widespread despite our increased surveillance.
You know, it was really encouraging when I first got that report here last week, that it was only 25, and still it's 25 too many, but in the grand scheme of things, it seems to be pretty good, and you know, our efforts are paying off. And that would seem, too, where we may have had a higher number of hunters in the woods because of the pandemic.
Yeah, we definitely saw a bump in participation, especially in 2020. You know, typically we see about a 3-4% decline in hunter numbers every year, and largely that's due to hunters aging out. You know, we just don't have the number of younger hunters coming into the sport to replace the number of older hunters going out. So we tend to see a pretty steady decline of, like I said, 3-4%. Some years it might be 2, some years it might be a little bit more, but and that's pretty consistent across most states that we've talked to. But in 2020, we actually saw an increase of about 4-5%. So it really sort of goes to explain what's keeping hunters out of the woods. And a lot of times is time and opportunity, because everything was kind of shut down. So people right. naturally gravitated towards the outdoors. And we did see a slight decline again in 2021, but we're still ahead of where we were in 2019 and 2018, you know, before the pandemic. So, you know, our hope is that, you know, that as bad as this pandemic has been for so many people, you know, that maybe it can reinvigorate some sort of passion with the outdoors, and some folks can sort of make time to prioritize hunting and getting out and participating in any sort of outdoor recreation.
Well, on a side note, it looks like everybody's got more time to hunt, too, by the amount of job openings I see. that's a whole nother show. I'm not even going to get into that. I'm just kidding. But again, like I said, it's encouraging. From the first time we got this information when I was at the MUCC office, I just happened to be there with Dan Eichinger when the news came in. He looks at me, he's like, we've got CWD in the wild. Do we yet know exactly how that happened? Because I know what my speculation was, and it seems to be pretty close as to what happened.
Yeah, and I think everybody's got a speculation and a story, and you know, I can talk about some of those speculations, but honestly, I think the most responsible way for me to talk about it is we just don't know. We don't know. We aren't certain how it got here. But given the extent that we found CWD, you know, in places like Montcalm County, Northeast Kent County, back in, I think it was 2018, it was pretty clear that it had been there for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't spread or accumulate that quickly. It's this sort of slow, silent killer that, you know, sort of takes effect over time. And by time I'm talking, you know, decades. So it's when you're finding it at, you know, even 1%, which doesn't sound like a lot to a lot of hunters, it takes years to get to that point. So we figure it's been there for a while and has just been sort of simmering for that long before mm-hmm. it finally reared its head.
Chad Stewart is a deer biologist with Michigan DNR. We're talking a little bit about CWD targeting the surveillance over the past couple of years. And of course, in last year, 25 positive deer found. And it's not just going to go away, but it's something we will keep our eye on. And Chad, if you don't mind hanging on, we're going to talk to you more here in a couple of minutes.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to speak more with Chad Stewart here in a little bit. Find out, you know, what was going on with hunter numbers as of right now for 2021, and see what else he's got up his sleeve for 2022 and beyond. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
This is Nick Munt of Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, buck knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here, being brought to you by our friends at Conquest Scents. Scents in a stick made by our friend Doug and Karen Roberts over there in just a little bit north of Flint and in Davison, Michigan. I think that's north of Flint. And they do a great job, man. And they do the Evercall VS1 and a whole array of other products. Find them online, conquestscents.com. And there's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Getting back to Chad Stewart, the deer biologist for the Michigan DNR. And we are... We were talking about the CWD, what they found last year and where we're kind of at right now. Let's talk, and I know I'm gonna preface this by saying I know we don't have complete numbers for last year. That's fine. I'm not worried about it. But how did the turnout look for hunters and success last year, roughly, thus far?
Yeah, so the one thing that we can sort of hang our hat on right now is, you know, deer license sales, and that's something that obviously we tally, and you know, our deer license sales were down anywhere between 3 and 3.5% compared to what you're looking at from 2020. Of course, you know, we had a bump in hunter participation in 2020, so it looks like that wasn't able to be fully sustained, but you know, we still had more license sold in 2021, you know, sort of towards the end of this pandemic than we had in 2019 before the pandemic started. So, you know, we're in a much better place in terms of license sales and hunter participation today than we would have expected to be in 2 years ago. So it's sort of the silver lining of everything. In terms of success, like you mentioned, the way that Michigan estimates their harvest is through a postseason harvest survey. That, as you can imagine, takes time because it's a fairly scientifically rigorous process that takes into account extensive feedback from hunters as well as extensive analysis from our survey specialist. We should have a better understanding of those numbers in probably June, so coming up. I would not be surprised if the UP was up a little bit from last year, with probably still sort of on the lower side of the maybe the 10-year trend. So we know that there are some low spots in the UP in terms of deer numbers. Again, wouldn't be surprised if the northern lower was down or at least similar to what it was back in 2020. And I heard a lot of great reports out of southern Michigan. So again, this is purely speculative, but I wouldn't be surprised if southern Michigan harvest was up a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? It's southern Michigan. I tell you what, it has produced some very, very big deer. I mean, it's got such great habitat, and the management's pretty good down there as well. And, you know, I could see numbers really kind of going up in that area just because of the attraction. Whether or not there's a lot of public land hunting going on down there, I don't know. But it's one of those places that you really want to get into, but it's difficult. Of course, Michigan in general has always been one of those places. If you can hunt here, you can hunt anywhere because of the deer pressure. And that's not just me saying it. That's people, professionals in this industry.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And one of the things that is, I guess, if you want to look at, again, a silver lining, you know, hunter numbers are declining. And while that, you know, might be overall bad for the sport in terms of what we can do from a management perspective, you know, you always want to have a lot more numbers because they, in terms of deer hunters, because that makes their voice that much stronger. But as you continue to have fewer and fewer hunters, you're going to start to see less and less pressure on your deer herd. Mm-hmm. You're going to start to see some bucks get through the year that would not have gotten through the year under, you know, 800 or 900,000 hunters when there are 500,000 hunters that we would anticipate here in the next 10 years. And you're going to see bigger rack deer, especially in southern Michigan, where, as you said, we have a lot more agriculture, a lot more private land that makes it a little bit easier for them to find places to hide. So I only anticipate that the quality of bucks over time, especially in southern Michigan, to continue to increase.
Yeah, it's, you know, that to me, I mean, I have family that owns a lot of property in those areas, and they manage it very well. And some of the stuff that they harvest is just incredible, you know, on a year in, year out basis. I want to talk about the check-ins. Speaking with Chad Stewart, the Michigan DNR here on Wild Michigan, you know, we have it's not a mandatory check-in. We have the optional check-in, but we have online now. But will there ever be, do you foresee a mandatory check-in in the next 10 years, maybe?
Yeah, actually, we're going to be talking about that with our Natural Resources Commission here next month in May. We're going to be moving forward with an electronic harvest reporting system where hunters will be essentially required to report their harvest through that system beginning this hunting season here in 2022. And, you know, just as we talked a couple minutes ago, how I don't have any preliminary numbers, it's purely subjective right now based on our harvest reporting or based on our harvest surveys that we conduct. You know, if you have me on next year at this time, I'll have those numbers for you ready to go in terms of hunters providing the information that we'll be able to, again, put out there on the internet. People can track how the harvest is going, even during in season, which is something that we've never had in Michigan before.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really excited about the movement and the direction that this is going. I think it's going to get a lot more hunters interested in understanding how the impact of the season is going over time, and we'll be able to compare that between years as we get really good participation with hunters reporting their harvest in season. And we're still going to be doing albeit a smaller scale down version of our survey afterward to correct for things, because we know that we're not going to see 100% of the deer harvested going through that system. So we're going to have to incorporate some sort of correction. So I really think that we're moving towards the best of both worlds. You know, we're going to have the real-time reporting that accompanies an online system, and the accuracy with a survey that includes confidence intervals around your estimate that we can really use statistical analysis for. So we're really excited about the direction we're moving with that.
Well, that's cool, because I've often wondered, excuse me, as a matter of fact, that was kind of a question that came up to me this morning, knowing I was going to talk to you. You know, where are we going to move in that direction? Because, you know, I know that there's so many people that are set, you know, what I'm saying, because we're one of those states, and I've said it a million times before, that I like this here, I like this here, I like this here, I don't like change. But we kind of need this change, especially with this, with reporting and everything else, to better how we do things management-wise. And, you know, and again, at least you've heard it here, and it won't be a surprise. Chad Stewart, really appreciate you joining us, man, and looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, Duran.
All right, Chad, hang on the line. I'll talk to you off air. We got more coming up. Going to find out how the fishing was on Lake Erie with Mark Sack coming up next on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line. Time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Oh, here we are, late April, getting ready for turkey season, opening up on Saturday, the 23rd. I think that's the 23rd, right? I don't even look at a calendar anymore. Which is sad, but I just know that turkey season opens up this Saturday. They've changed it because it used to be on that Monday, but now since our conversation with Al Stewart, former Upland Game Bird Specialist and for the Michigan DNR. They said that he's moved it down to the 23rd. Saturday gives everybody an opportunity to get out a little bit easier than the Monday would have. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But right now, we're going to talk with Mark Sack, outdoor writer, and a guy that was just a little too busy to talk to me last week because he was on Lake Erie walleye fishing. And you know what? This is one of those things where you get a pass because Lake Erie in the springtime is like Detroit River in the springtime, and just it's madness, absolute madness. And if you want to find the biggins, as Al Bundy would say, it's right there on Lake Erie. How are you doing, sir?
I am well. I'm fixed. You know, it fixed me to be down there for a week. Actually, I was all over the place. I didn't know where I was going to be, if I had cell connection or what. So normally I'd never put you off.
No, I get it.
Boy, our luck, you know.
Right. No, that's okay. But
yeah, we had a tremendous trip, even though the weather was poopy. But, you know, so I go to Port Clinton, Ohio, and that's I love fishing the Western Basin. And not to slight Michigan at all, because there's some very, very good fishing to be had over there. It's just Port Clinton is just different. There's probably, I'm going to say, 50 boat launches, half of which are free, don't cost you anything. There's so many places you can run and hide and fish. And you've got many, many, many chances at that big 13-pounder, you know. So I like to run down there. Actually, we've been down there for the last month, actually. We started in mid-March and got a trip down there and fished for 3 days that time. And then we got down last Sunday and fished until Tuesday, and then came up and we ended up on the Muskegon River fishing steelhead for the rest of the week. So very interesting down on Lake Erie. All the fish were downtown Port Clinton. It was amazing. The water had kind of stratified so that the right tint of water was a mile offshore, right out of downtown Port Clinton, and there was 1,000 boats in there at least. So if you ran out to Green Island or Put-in Bay or someplace there, you were going in the wrong direction. You had to actually turn out of Catawba State Boat Launch and go south towards Port Clinton, which nobody does. I mean, we're not used to doing that, you know. So, and you couldn't see those boats anywhere. They were all tucked in. I mean, they were far enough in, you couldn't really see them really well. And, you know, and I'd happened to run into a good old buddy, Mark Broombaugh, down there, who fished the PWT, and he's Mark, they're right downtown, man. He says, we're launching out of the Portage River downtown and going to just slide out and start hammering them. We really got them yesterday. And so thank you, Mark, for that. And so we slid out there, and it just loaded in there. First time I had ever fished Lake Erie in 20 feet of water.
Sure.
Usually that's smallmouth city down there in 20 feet of water. We usually would run out into 30, sometimes 40 feet in the Western Basin and fish suspended fish there. So it was cool. It was very cool. It was a different trip. We had multiple, you know, three fish on at once. I think our big fish was, didn't quite go 10. It went probably nine and a little over 9.5. But it was 30 inches long and it spawned out.
Wow.
Yeah, there's still some real nice fish down there. Not as many big fish. There's, you know, and I think you'll see, you know, as guys are looking at social media on the Detroit River, and that you're not seeing those big 11, 12 pounders as much as we used to. We will. They'll be back. We've had some really good spawns, but it's going to take a few years to get those fish back up to that kind of weight. But who in the heck is going to gripe over, you know, multiple 8-pounders in a day? I mean, not me.
No, that would not be me either. It's funny, you know, our good friend Lance Valentine always talks about misery loving company. When nobody's catching fish, there's always a raft of boats all out there together not catching fish. And, you know, so you need to move. You need to find them. And with the electronics and everything we have today, how do you not find them? How are you not, you know, especially with a tip like that? I mean, we do have radios too.
Oh yeah. And the big thing, you know, I'm totally convinced of this. And, you know, I fished the PWT with Lance. We were teammates. We ran around the country together. We fished the MWT as teammates. And, you know, so he and I, we start smelling like each other after a while. You know? And, you know, you get in a school of fish that's not biting, go find a school that is biting. So there's always a place to run, and I'm a firm believer in that. That if these fish are here and you've washed enough lures and you know you're in the zone, move. You know, go find another school that's biting. And I know that's exactly what Lance does at this point, and that's what we do down there. Even trolling, you know, because usually when you're trolling, it's not the right color of water. And what happens is, if water is too clean, it's colder, and you want a lot of fish in that cold water. If it's too dirty, you'll find fish there, but they don't want to suck in through their gill plate because there's grit in that water. So they won't bite. But if you find the mid-stain water, it is on, buddy. It is on.
I speak with Mark Sack, outdoor writer and angler here on Wild Michigan. Mark, it's one of like three or four places always consistently for walleye year round, and even later in the year, like Lance was telling us last week, Detroit River. I mean, so many people just, you know, well, it's here it is, this day of May, we're done. You know, it's not the case. They're there all the time, you know, and Lake Erie's no different. That has got to be one of the most prolific places for walleye in the country.
And it had its all-time largest hatch 2 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
So all time in recorded history, okay, largest hatch. So, and they've had two successful hatches back to back. Now, that's not counting this year. We don't know those numbers yet. But last year and the year before, outstanding. So that truly means that we've got a lot of really great fishing for years to come down there. Just got to learn how to do it. And that's the fun part, right? I mean, get into, you know, teaching fishing with Lance and he'll hook you right up, man. I mean, he's very good at passing on good information. So, and, you know, that's worth the investment to be brought up to his speed right away. I mean, that's good stuff.
Mark Sack joins us. Mark, 16 or 15 years ago when we started this show, we saw the incline of walleye in Michigan waters and down in Lake Erie in the basin area over there. And then we were riding this high, okay, what they call like the 10-year wave. That wave has not crashed. It has not even succumbed to any form at all. And I just look at this going, what are we doing right?
Well, obviously, Lake Erie remains very fertile, and it's still got bait fish. That's one of the keys, because you've got to have the protein to allow those fish to survive. By the way, this year, 20 years ago, in the PWT, it was 2002, I ended up third in the PWT event, didn't even win the dang thing, had 15 fish that went 132.89 pounds.
Wow.
It was 8.72 average fish. So it's been rolling for a long time. And so ever since, number one, the lake cleaned up. Number two, you know, it's shallow, so it's remained very fertile. Mm-hmm. Number three, they've got some good regs down there.
You know, right.
They try to protect those big fish. So,
all right, we're going to talk more with Mark Sack here. Going to find out what else is going on this early portion of spring. Find us online, wildmichiganradio.com.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez hanging out with you on this, I don't know, late April, almost late April day. Opening day of turkey season, Michigan, is the 23rd. And I want to thank our friends at Not Just Guns for being a part of this show. Also, Conquest Sense, before I get started. But it truly is my favorite hunting season of the year in Michigan. I've yet to bear hunt in Michigan. I've got enough points. I want to get out there. I want to get a Michigan black bear so I can complete my personal slam of Michigan big game animals. But truly, my favorite upland game bird, the game bird in general, is hunting wild turkey here in Michigan. And man, we've got a lot of them. I know, Mark Sack, you've got one. You got your eyeball on as we speak.
Yeah, I call him Elvis. You know, he's quite the dude. He comes strutting into my backyard after a hen the other day, and my chocolate lab says, "Dude, that's not a pheasant, man. That's huge." And he was full strut all the way, and I got just gorgeous video of him coming in, and he better watch out because I got his ticket, you know. And I love turkey hunting, too. I've got the old 1187 and put the full choke in and go back. And, you know, we don't have as many as a lot of people in the state do, but we're edging higher. We've got, you know, and especially here, using the Pheasants Forever concept of habitat improvement. I've done my whole property in switchgrass, and I got some small trails through it so that I can get back into the spots that I want to get to. And turkeys will use those trails, I mean, every day.
Sure.
So it's a very fun thing. You don't have to really worry about your scent control too much, but don't blink, right?
Right.
For a bird that is as dumb as they are, boy, they can catch movement so well. I mean, they're just super pros at catching any movement. So that's the cool part about it. And then, of course, you call them in and they come so far and they go, "Nah, I don't think so." And they, you know, they're hung up by a twig or something, or you know, or a little ditch or something. And you know, that's the best thing. I mean, it's not as fun for me to go out and get one on the first day as it is going out every day and then finally getting one on the fifth day or something like that,
right?
You know, where you had to work for it a little bit and the turkey's beaten you a couple times, you know?
You know, and that's exactly true, too. I mean, sometimes you have to get up and move. And when you decide to get up and move, when you make that critical decision, wait 5 more minutes. Because
exactly.
About the time you decide to get up is when he's popping his head up out of you know, some spot that you couldn't see or something else. I'm not kidding when I say.
Or
behind you. Right. Wait 5 minutes before you're going to move. You're probably going to get busted anyway. But in conversation I've had with Al Stewart, and Mark, you know this as well, it's not like hunting deer where you need to have your blind up, you know, in plenty of time for them to get used to it. Hell, you could put a pop-up blind in the middle of a hay field, and they won't care.
No, and you know, that's their mind is truly on finding a hen. They're not concerned with anything. But they're still being hunted by predators, so they're going to watch for movement. That's the main thing. So pop-ups are perfect for it. They really are. I really kind of like just going to a couple spots that I've had for years, you know, and sitting against a tree. I still love doing that. It's just because, you know, it is so amazing that the woods has just exploded with wildlife, especially the songbirds. It's just absolutely amazing. Some days in the morning, when that sun pops out and you still got some dew on the grass row, you know, that quack grass is about 6 inches tall, and you know, and the birds are just amazing during that time. So it truly is a special season. You know, if you haven't tried turkey hunting, try it, man. You'll enjoy the experience, period.
Yeah, you will. And you know, even and don't give up. Dude, I'm gonna tell you this from personal experience. Don't give up if it's windy, if it's raining. If you're calling and they're calling back, they know where you are and they're on their way. Okay, it's you have to be so patient with these birds and mindful of what you do. I can't even begin to tell you, you know, and I know you know that for sure.
Oh yeah. The other cool thing is sometimes you'll get one that'll come in from a mile away. I mean, if he's by himself, you know, and he hears that box call, he's coming. He's going to come. He's going to do whatever he can to come. Whereas on the other side of it, you know, you're calling and he's answering, but he's got a hen with him. Forget it. He's
yeah.
not coming. That's, you know, that's the cool part about it, you know. And, you know, it can be over in the blink of an eye, too. And so it's a fun, it's probably our funnest short season. You know, it really is.
You know, and with firearms, too, a lot of people don't like to use the big 12 gauge and stuff. I mean, they're making 410s for turkey season now that are doing the job just fine. And that amazes me, too, where we have come in just the past 10 years for firearms when it comes to turkey. Everything used to be 12 gauge with a 3-inch magnum. But now things have really changed. We're finding out that that's not really the case.
Well, when you think about it, 410 really fits in a pop-up blind a heck of a lot better than a goose gun does. You know, my 1187's got the 20, I think it's a 30-inch barrel, but it's a long gun, you know. Mm-hmm. It's bulky. So even picking that up and trying to hold it while he's coming into position, you know, isn't that easiest thing to do. And I could see where a 410, boy, that would be slick, you know. I could even see guys using, you know, 410 shot in a 44 pistol, you know.
Right.
I mean, something that's a lot smaller so that you can hold it up longer and, you know, and we're going for headshots here anyways. You know, that's the key with turkeys is you got to try to shoot them in the head so they don't run off and, you know, you got to try to eat. Good luck tracking a turkey, let me tell you.
Oh yeah,
that sucker takes off, you know, it's pretty tough to find him, so you know you got to go for that headshot.
We had that conversation here a couple of weeks ago where I had called in two birds. They're coming right at me. I picked one of them, you know. I wasn't really looking at the beards. I knew they were both males, both toms, both had adequate beard. I shot and I got up, the other one takes off, and then I went to pick up my bird. Well, it got up and started doing a low flying thing across the hayfield. Then it took a nosedive. Well, of course I went to shoot at it as it took off, and I realized I was about to hit the fan, so I swung my shot away. Ran over to pick the bird up. It got up and did a straight shot across the hayfield again. By that time, I caught it because I was in much better shape at the time. And I just walked him back over to the fence line, getting the you know what kicked out of me by his wings, but I got him, and it turned out to be my best bird ever.
Video.
Oh my! I wish I would have had that on video, and it worked out well because that ended up being my triple bearded bird. So
very nice.
It was
very nice.
It was worth the beating.
Yeah. Got to check those birds or those beards out really closely because if you don't, you could miss that. And I've seen a couple triple beards, you know, over the last few years, and those pretty much automatically get you in the good old record book.
Yeah, anything with a multiple will get you in the book.
Yeah, so it's worth just to check out and make sure that, you know, because sometimes it looks like it's one and there's a couple longer things, but if you really take a look at it closely, you can see that there could be multiples there. So
yeah, I had on that bird I had three, on the previous one I had two. That was my very first turkey, and then my third one, of course, just a single. but it was a very nice single. So you know, I've been,
they're all fun,
every last one of them, dude. Doesn't matter if it's a Jake, doesn't matter if it's a trophy tom. It's turkey hunting, I will say this time and time again, is my favorite time of year to get out and be in the woods, because it's still a little pre-mosquito. The temperatures are usually okay, but whether you're calling or whether you're actually hunting, to me it's absolutely the best, you against the bird.
It is a great time of year, my friend.
All right, Mark Sack, appreciate you joining us as always. And we look forward to talking to you in the future. Talk a little steelhead, I'm sure. But in the meantime, more coming your way. Thanks to Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR for joining us. Think about that mandatory deer check. It's coming your way. We heard it here absolutely first on Wild Michigan. Thanks to Not Just Guns and Conquest Sense for having us here on the Michigan Talk Network.